Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back. And you get two doses of us this week because we had to push our rewind to this week. And we are excited still to talk about episode 5. And we got a good chunk of examples and fun little Survivor Rewind facts for you coming hot off the presses.
Is it really hot? I mean, I know we're a little late than usual, so can we say it's
but
hot?
But we made this episode today, so it's hot for us.
It's true. McKenna, how do you feel about this episode? I mean, we've had a few days to digest it. Like, how do you feel mm-hmm. it? Because it kind of feels like, to me, it felt like a bit of a turning point in the new era. Yes, we've been at this point where, you know, we've all come to accept the new era, but this is, again, with like this new twist, this feels like a moment that Survivor hasn't run out of all their ideas and still have good ones hiding in there.
Yeah. So I like the twist. It excuse me, it's a little bit, it's different. We see things happen like this where there is cross-tribal interactions, but it's never due to a random draw for a challenge and having to compete together and work together and have bonds of like, oh, we did this. It's actually, it's more like a summit situation, which we see in the episode that we're watching for the patron, for the Patreon. So please become a patron of the Survivor Specialist. The link is right below us. And we're watching episode 3 of Millennials versus Gen X, where they have that summit. So it's different, and it adds a little extra element of maybe camaraderie or something, where like they wouldn't have that bond at a summit or Thailand where you know, you painted yourself and got to talk to someone. So it's like, it's a little bit different and added a nice twist. And I don't know if we can always say that about the new era, where it adds a nice twist to the game.
And I was a little skeptical coming into it because, you know, obviously in last week's preview, we saw Jeff say, it's a brand new, never before seen Survivor twist. And I was a little scared. Obviously, we all saw, like, in that promotional video that there were only two groups competing in the challenge. It's like, okay, how new can this be? Like,
swapping, I was ready for a swap to try. Well, it is new for the new era.
Yeah, but the way Jeff phrased it, it didn't seem that way, right? So I was really concerned and worried about where Jeff and production might go with this, but I think it really worked well, and Brian killing it Weber probably puts a good point out here that it's really good because it didn't take away anyone's vote.
Fact.
There's nothing wonky going on here. There were no consequences for losing this challenge, which was really nice. And instead it just kind of took into account this idea of like, okay, let's have mingling between these tribes prior to a swap, prior to a merge. I mean, by the looks of it, we're coming into a merge this week in Survivor. So is this still, that's the question, right? Are we still getting like an urn emerge? Because this kind of felt the same as that, but obviously different. And it'll be interesting to see how the implications of what happened this week play out next week. Just to see where things go. But overall, and yeah, there's a lot of talk about this twist and everything. Outside of this twist, we still had a lot of good reality TV happening. We had, obviously, the ramifications from Kishan being blindsided last round and Rome being Rome. This entire episode still kind of delivering on all cylinders there, in my opinion, at least. We had a bit of drama rising on that Tuku camp, just with the way that Tiana was talking at the, what did they call it again? The Survivor
Social Hour.
Social Hour, which, silly, silly name. But it was still really interesting seeing how there was fallout from that immediately and how the tribes were kind of adjusting to it. And despite the fact that we do see Gotta go to tribal council here, and we see what has kind of been a telegraphed boot for the last several weeks at this point with Annika going, we find out it's a complete blindside, absolutely nothing there. And I think it just, despite there being a telegraphed move, and I didn't personally have any questions watching it as to who was going to go home, but it still felt like another fantastic episode of Survivor.
Yeah, it was really good, where I had a lot of notes written down of moments I would love to talk about, but then some things just moments in past Survivor just didn't come to my head, and I was like, ooh, if we could think of things to relate to this moment, that'd be great. But I feel like this season is really challenging our specific podcast,
but that's good. I honestly, I want Survivor to make this specific podcast hard, because and not in the way where it's like, oh, we have the exact same thing, we can't just keep talking about the same moments over and over and over again. I want it to be, hey, this is actually something that hasn't happened in the 46 seasons prior to this. Yeah. How are you going to relate it to something that happened in Survivor's Pact?
So we are going to dive right in now, and we're going to go with our outwit moments, and that is painting others as targets. So we touched upon this a few minutes ago briefly, but Tiana putting a target on Gabe, and he's not there to really defend himself because he didn't win the reward. But she's like, Gabe has been scheming. He played an idol and he's been, you know, kind of on the outs and is just kind of like this, you know, one to watch. And so we wanted to see where else that has happened in Survivor history.
Yeah. And I think obviously the more recent example of this, and we kind of tried to avoid new era examples, so we're not going to dive in too much, right? Is at that Earn the Merge in 43, where Gabe was just like, Ellie, right? And that is one of those moments where we do see this. It's very similar to what it feels like Tiana's doing, except it felt a little more graceful in 43. Now, perhaps that's a winner's edit coming in to perspective, mm-hmm. as opposed to not a winner's edit. It may be question mark. Tiana might still end up winning. We don't know how this is going to play out, although it doesn't seem like Sue's very happy about it. That's for sure. But because of that, like, it was really interesting kind of diving back into this idea of painting targets and how different players have approached it in the past. And the example I want to take us all the way back to Guatemala, because Guatemala has, I think, one of the more interesting aspects of a situation like this, where it's very similar to what Kishan was saying last week about Rome and encouraging Rome to keep that tension up between him and Saul, which ultimately backfired on Kishan. But I think this is more similar to what was going on with Tiana here, because this was Brian in Guatemala realizing that Blake and his like frat frat boy storytelling was just like rubbing people the wrong way. And like Brian said in the comment here, it's Danny's birthday. And again, surprisingly, this is another instance of tribes, for some reason or another, intermingling prior to a merge. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those rare moments where we get that. And Brian just keeps egging on Blake as much as possible to be as irritating as possible so that because Brian realizes he's on the bottom of his tribe. He's mm-hmm. on the outs. He's out of the numbers.
Yeah, him, and Amy, and Gary. And Amy just keeps going, Golden Boy, to try and, like, egg that on even further. And Blake plays into it. Like, this is just a great early version of something that is, like, a very strategic move when, like, the early seasons aren't typically looked at as strategic.
And I think that's one of the things that we realized looking back at seasons when we were trying to find an earlier example of this, was that you had threat painting, but it was never to the same extent we saw in this moment in Guatemala, nor to the extent we saw in 47, right? Where it's this forward-thinking motion of like building towards something in the future where you have to just figure out a way to put that... I mean, it's lack of a better word, right? Like, you're trying to incept the idea into everyone else's mind that they are coming up with the plan of getting rid of this person because you're mentioning them so much and the target's just there. You understand it and you move towards it. And I think Brian just handles himself so well in this situation because he doesn't actually have to actively do anything, which allows him to sink into the background here. Instead, he just keeps motivating Blake to do the things that's already rubbing people the wrong way.
Yeah, like Blake is telling a story and then Brian just asks one like question of like, all right, so you like this in a woman? And he's like, yeah. And it's like, it like he just asks one simple question and it like furthers the hole that Blake is digging himself into.
And I know there are some differences between these moments, especially because Brian's trying to do this for an immediate response, whereas Tiana is clearly setting up for a future here because there is no implication of a merge at this point in 47. But the fact that Blake is doing this in a situation where everyone is together just means, like, you know what? Even if I do go down, at least I'm taking Golden Boy down with the ship.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So then we have my moment. I'm going to one of my favorite Survivor moments of like all time. And it's Tyson just digging Aris in a hole where he wants Aris to always be that target in front of him. It's at the swap. He kind of does it like at the OG camp, but not really, because a lot of the favorites are like playing into Aris, but he really wants to get the newbies and like the new people being like, all right, yeah, Aris, not great to have around here. See, he's like trying to destroy your shelter, the shelter you've had this entire time. If I were to take out a support wall, wouldn't you hate me? And it's like, I love how just Tyson has these funny quips that dig Aris into the hole of like, he is the main target here. But, and it's just funny rather than like, hey, you know, Gabe played this idol. It just gives it a different twist of unassumingness that only Tyson can do.
Yeah, I think the most impressive way about, or thing about the way that Tyson approaches this situation is it's never just like, oh yeah, by the way, Aris is totally the leader. It's the subtlety of always asking Aris's opinion in a group setting so that Aris comes across as a leader. And again, like, we're talking about Tyson Apostle in a winning game. Like, we know what's happening here. We know where he's going and everything. And again, like you said, it's comical. Like, there's this levity to the way that Tyson approaches it because it's Tyson. Right? Like, that's just the way that his character comes across.
I don't think anybody else could have done it the way Tyson did. I think it would have come off a little bit, like, ruder. And people just slough it off because it's Tyson. He has this character arc of being, like, the goofy guy in the toga, voting himself out of heroes versus villains, now is here for blood versus water and broke his or dislocated his shoulder and is just like so unassuming this entire game. And now just being like, oh yeah, Aris, that guy always like doing the right things and like being Mr. Hero, do great at challenges and, you know, doing crap around camp. It just like is such a unassuming and beautiful moment to try and like build Aris up, because Aris does have a target because he is a winner, but it's just elevates it a little bit further into something Aris may or may not actually be doing. It's like he gives like little fibs of like, oh, Aris is gonna cut down this entire tree. That sucks for you guys, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it and the way it comes off and makes it feel better, because especially if we compare it to this Tiana moment in this week's episode, we have Tyson confessionals explaining the entire situation, right?
Yeah.
And that's where I think a lot of the levity of it comes from and why it feels so fun, is because we have Tyson explaining it and he's kind of like, you know, laughing along with the audience as he's going through it. And instead, when we look at Tiana doing it, whose perspective are we getting on that from? Or it from? Sue's. Right? Like, Sue is a major part of that perspective that we get there. We don't get anyone else's. In 27, it's framed as like this strategy that Tyson's doing. Again, winner edit type stuff, right? But in 47, we kind of get the outside perspective of it, which I think is honestly more of like the well-rounded editing of 47 than anything, of someone responding to it. I think it's a better way of editing it, so we have an idea. But at the same time, like, we have Tiana like kind of explaining it to us, but it's just like more matter of fact than it is like an intentional approach to like throw Gabe under the bus. It seemed like the logical thing for Tiana to do because Gabe was the only person from Tuku who wasn't there, right? And it really changes the way the situation presents itself, in my opinion.
Yeah, it does. It does. I think all three of these moments go about painting targets in completely different ways. And it's like, while still having the root same concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so interesting. And I think it's one of those things that we are going to see change over and over again throughout Survivor mm-hmm. moving forward. You'll never see the exact same way of people painting targets, but there'll be those little hints, and maybe people need to revisit some of the older seasons of Survivor to see how people painted targets in an era where, oh yeah, he found an advantage wasn't the only thing you could say about someone.
Right, exactly, yeah. All right, so now we're moving on to outplay, and we are talking about the knockdown puzzle that we had in this episode, where you can see the completed puzzle, you have to throw your sandbags at the puzzle pieces, knock them completely off of the platform, and then rebuild the puzzle correctly. And we see it only two other times, which are our two moments here that we're talking about, and that's Kageyan and Millennials versus Gen X. John, I'll let you go first again, since Kageyan is before Millennials versus Gen X.
Yes, it is. And this is the first time we ever see this challenge. And in that season, it's just a reward challenge. It's actually the final six. It's pretty late in the game that we see this. The remaining six are divided into two groups. One of Cass, Spencer, and Wu. The other of Tasha, Trish, and Tony. And it's different than this. There isn't anything leading up to it. It's literally just this knock the puzzle down, put it back up. Except there's a little bit of a twist on it where you are knocking down your opponent's puzzle as quickly as possible. And as soon as one of the puzzles is completely knocked down, you switch and then you start building your puzzle up. So there's this incentive to knock the puzzle down as quickly as possible just so that you can have a head start on the puzzle, on your own puzzle moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like this idea so much better than just the knock down your own and rebuild it. I think it's so fun, but it does have to be basically the entire challenge or mm-hmm. the starting piece to the challenge. And yeah, you can't do it like they did here or in Millennials versus Gen X.
I think like the problem with it is like, this challenge doesn't work with three tribes, is what it comes down to. You can't just be like, switch, and then whoever knocks down one first, you switch again. It doesn't quite work the same way. Right. Technically, you could, but it gets complicated when you're switching there. And like you said, I think you can't really do anything before it in this instance, because you need to guarantee that these two tribes are starting at the same spot for it to make sense. Yeah. I like the idea you should be
rocketing these sandbags before they even get there, and then it's just like, okay, our puzzle's done.
Exactly. I do like the idea you had, though, of like starting a challenge with something like this and then doing something afterwards. I think that works, because in the end, this like simple puzzle doesn't seem like enough to be a challenge, which is why I'm not surprised we see it as like a final six reward challenge. Mm-hmm. And we see it so late in Kageyan, because mm-hmm. it is one of those things where it's like, let's just like let them do this for half an hour and then we can move on with the game.
Yeah, I think it's not something commonly done in American Survivor to have the puzzle portion first, following with a physical portion. Yeah. Like we see it in Australian Survivor a good amount, but it's interesting and fun to have that twist of doing the puzzle first. So it could have been like I wouldn't say a better challenge, because I really do like the challenge in Kageyan where, you know, you have to knock down your opponent's pieces, but it could have elevated it, but does it need it? You know, it's that balance of, is this too much or is this just the right amount? There's only six people left. Let's just get them on this reward, because this is a reward that you want to spend more time at. It's where they go to the town and, you know, you have more of the culture, and this is a reward that people would probably rather see than have 10 minutes of a physical portion of the challenge.
Yeah, I think from an editing perspective, it makes sense. I think like as a quick, easy thing, it makes sense. From a production standpoint, it probably makes sense with this placement in Kageyan. And mm-hmm. it's just interesting that of the two previous times we've seen this, one is like at the end of the game and the other is quite early in the game. And this one's kind of coming at the midpoint in the game.
Yeah, that is true. So Millennials versus Gen X happens in episode 3, the one that we're watching on the Patreon. And it's really fun to rewatch this challenge because I honestly really like it. And I know we've talked crap on balance beams with this podcast, but the integration of carrying the bag and having people be able to go back and carry the bags for you, or, you know, CC taking a long time. It is basically this challenge from 47, but you five people have their own individual bag that they have to carry. Two people have to deal with throwing the sandbags, and two more people deal with putting the puzzle together. And it's your own puzzle that you're knocking off of a table. And I really liked this challenge of dragging these your own bags, and you have to navigate the balance beam by yourself, or you have to make someone go back and do it. So Taylor is ripping through it for the Millennials, and Chris is doing it for Gen X, but people are a little bit more stubborn and wanting to do it themselves or taking their time, like Cece or Paul, thinking he can do it because he's like Mr. Macho Man. And meanwhile, they should have just had Chris, who can take the balance beam in about 4 steps, carry the these coconut bags. But I think having it as it was such a simple puzzle in Millennials versus Gen X, I think, because of the added physical aspect, because it was just the iguanas from the logo in Millennials versus Gen X, where Kagyan, since it was the main portion of the challenge, it had like a little bit more of an intricate mask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think like the interesting thing about the Millennials versus Gen X thing, like you said, I think the balance beam really works here. And I think it's not the typical Survivor balance beam we see, because it's all like zigzaggy and it had, like goes up and down. Like it's definitely a more difficult balance beam. And like you said, like just carrying these massive bags, we're not really given an idea of how heavy these bags are. We're not really given an idea of how heavy they are in 47 either, or the like massive bag is in 47 either.
I can imagine though, because they're struggling to drag it.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, 47 definitely looked up, especially if they had to add more to it as well as they continued.
So it seemed, with 47, it seemed like a pretty simple challenge of just like drag this bag to this point. But the tediousness of adding all these sandbags and coconuts to the bag would like drive me up a wall, where you have here a bunch of like tasks in Millennials versus Gen X, where I think that is almost like it's a different mental frustration when you're looking at Cece taking forever on the balance beam versus, oh my God, we have so many coconuts and sandbags to chuck in this bag.
I think the interesting thing with the way it plays out in Millennials versus Gen X versus this is, I don't think, despite the fact that Gata kind of has that moment where it's like, Andy, you're using the wrong side of the blade. Like, come on, cut this rope.
Yes.
And like, arguably, if he had just used the right side of the blade, they could have won this challenge and not gone to Tribal Council. However, the Millennials versus Gen X, because there is this more individual element to each section of the challenge, it kind of let you put the blame on someone, which is what we see with Cece getting the blame there instead of, yeah, okay, Andy gets the blame a little bit, but like, did he really cost you the challenge? No, you should have just dragged this bag a little harder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Overall, I think all three challenges are really fun in their own specific parts of the game. Like you said, it's a beginning, middle, and an end game. And while it's like pretty much the same challenge, it provides different ramifications for their spots in the game.
It was really interesting seeing the main difference between this and the predecessors.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where it's a platform. It's just like a raised platform. So it seems like it's only a couple of inches off the ground as opposed to a table. And it becomes relevant in the challenge, where Saul has to knock those blocks off even further because they're like resting on the back of the platform. And you don't have that issue on the table because there's enough space that the pieces can fall down. So it was really interesting to see, like, again, like these little tiny changes that survive, like production makes to these challenges sometimes is enough to make it fresh and exciting. Despite the fact that, yes, this is only the third time we've seen this challenge, it still felt slightly different because of that platform as opposed to a table. Simple things, just changing the levels that a challenge happened at can completely change the way you have to approach it.
And while watching, I was like, man, Saul like threw a beanbag at the, or a sandbag at the puzzle piece and they didn't move. I was like, how? I remember them just like chucking beanbags and the puzzle pieces flying. And then I see Jay wing a sandbag at the puzzle pieces and they're like, puh. Like they didn't move either. So it was like very similar once you had the groove of like chucking these sandbags at the like wall of pieces that they'll eventually start tumbling. But it was like a brick wall to start out with too.
Yeah, it's just a very, it's a very interesting challenge, and it's so nice to see these type of revisits to these older things and these ideas that like are good ideas. Let's bring them back every once in a while. And the fact that this is a challenge that, again, we've only seen three times now in a span of 20 seasons, I guess, if we're really being technical, right? And that those seasons were 28. 33 and now 47. Like, it does feel like, as much as we do get tired of recycled challenges every once in a while, it is nice when we get a challenge like this that we have that memory of quite well, and it's being spaced out because there are enough Survivor challenges. They could just rotate challenges all the time, but they, by doing this, it adds a little bit more of this idea of like, you never know what to expect in the challenges. And especially like with the dragging of the sandbags and coconuts, this is a challenge that a lot of the times, if you go back through Survivor, and we see a lot of talk about like challenge strength and needing it later in the game. But typically you'll notice that the like real strong strength required challenges are really early in the game because that's when players have the most energy because they haven't been starving for multiple days. This is one of those instances where kind of pays off to have a bigger, stronger person around. I think if Saul ended up going last week instead of Keyshawn, I don't think there was any chance Lava was winning, like even coming second in the challenge.
Yeah, it would have been a struggle bus for them for sure, because Saul was the one whipping those sandbags.
Especially when they got stuck on the platform. Like, and that's the interesting thing, because this is a departure from Survivor in the past, where you don't really need strong people. Every once in a while, throwing something like this at the beginning of the, or at the end of the pre-merge section, changes the way people kind of have to approach the game and who they feel safe voting out.
Yeah. All right, moving on to our at last moments. Annika left us with a beautiful exit here in 47, and we're talking tribal exits. Because she kind of left with a lot of questions, a lot of shock, a lot of words. So, we wanted to take a look at two of our favorites. They might not be the exact, the closest two, like the closest two would probably be Michaela, but we've talked about millennials versus Gen X a little bit here this episode. So we do have the nod to Michaela and her departure from millennials versus Gen X, because that is beautiful and very similar. So we are going to go with one of mine, which is Greg leaving Borneo, and he just starts wailing and is like, oh no, I'm voted out, cry. And it's just like, he's such a character for this season. He has the coconut phone. He has like just some of his confessionals, the relationship with his sister. He just is a character, and the way he exits is just so him, and it wraps up his story very beautifully.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's so hard when we look at like the beginning of Survivor for an exit like this, and the fact that we actually get kind of this over the top dramatic exit in Borneo is impressive enough, because this is a season where it wasn't that cutthroat. We didn't see a bunch of people going. Greg understood that he was going pretty much that entire time at that point. He knew he was gone. But the most interesting thing about it is, like, Greg also knew how to play it up for the camera.
Oh, for sure.
That's what he's doing here. And that's
his relationship with Colleen was all played for the camera.
Yeah. And that's what's different than what we see with Annika. And I mean, Brian said it here, like, right? That's not the one I was trying to bring up. This one. I felt so bad for her. You could tell how much she cared. And you could, in her final words, when she's like bawling and like she is stunned to see that she is out of here. But that's like the difference here, where Greg's kind of taking this jovial approach to it. And I think it's still this memorable exit. And it's not like to the extreme of the Michaela exit that we see in Millennials versus Gen X, which honestly, this Annika reaction, pretty close to. Like, it's not quite like the who did this, but I mean, we kind of got a who did this moment in this episode of 47, right? And it was interesting watching like Sam put up his hand and be like, me, and then Andy's like, nah, there was three votes. It was all of us, obviously. Like,
and then she was like, Rachel, did you know? And Rachel's like, no, I didn't.
And so, yes, it does draw that like direct comparison to the Millennials versus Gen X, but I think sometimes people need to remember we're in reality TV zone. And Greg always knew he was in reality TV zone.
Yeah, exactly. And I just like when people, even if it's a little bit more negative, like exit with style, and have like some words like Annika had, or you know, a crying fit like Greg has, or just where it's not like, I'm gonna look back at you and then leave. Like, it just adds a little element of spice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm gonna go again to one of these more like jovial exits where it isn't soul crushing. Like, it's not like Savage leaving after he gets idled out and, you know, flipping off Abby Maria as she says that, you know, at least you made the merge. It's not Natalia being jury. You're right, the jury.
Yeah.
It's not Natalia being like absolutely pissed at Alec and just like
stop smiling,
completely in disbelief as she's getting her torch snuffed and everything. I'm going to go to one of my all-time favorite Survivor player, Jonathan Penner in the Philippines, when he goes and he refuses to hug Abby Maria on his way out. He says like, you know what? No, I'm not going to hug anyone else. This is done. And like, you know, yes, there's that element of seriousness to it where he's not doing great. But he goes up, he gets his torch snuffed, and he's still like, again, in that reality TV mode, like he knows what he's doing. I mean, obviously, like he's a writer. He knows how to make stories and everything like that. So he gets his torch stuff and he walks out and he's whistling the Tribal Council music as he leaves.
Yeah, suck eggs. And he just has a few like little quips for everybody at the end. And it's just so Jonathan Penner. And it's just one of the most iconic Survivor exits.
Yeah, and it's, sure, it's not even like the most iconic exit from Philippines, because that season has some interesting exits for sure. We got some final words from Jeff Kent. We have, obviously, Dawson going up and just kissing.
Kissing Jeff. Yep.
But, like, this felt more appropriate as to this Annika comparable, because it's the reaction after the vote that matters. Sometimes I get it. Like, there's a disbelief. You're stunned, and that's what we get. It's nice when we get this little bit of character. And that's what we saw from Annika. And like Brian said, right, you tell how much this meant to Annika.
Yeah.
I like that in my Survivors as well. I like knowing that people care. And does it suck seeing her like bawling in her final words? Absolutely. But at the same time,
this is someone who cared about the game. And that's what you want.
Yeah, that's what we want. And again, that's why Survivor has just been killing it with their casting lately. Like, these are the people. We're getting emotion from these people as they're leaving the game. That's good. That is, I think, a keystone in casting a good Survivor series season and knowing you've done it well. If people leave and they don't have a response to it, that means they don't care. I want to see people care about this game, and I'm so glad we're getting that from the 47 cast.
Yeah. I know we tell you to watch a lot of things, like the episode, but watch Peridium's video of top 20 most iconic Survivor exits. It is great, and it was, John and I watched it to kind of refresh ourselves on some of these exit moments, and it's just a really fun, good video. So give that video a watch after listening to this.
Yeah. But again, right. I mean, I know people are probably wondering, like, we haven't talked about negotiations at all, which came up this episode. This is an interesting one. You can get more of our thoughts on that listing on the Patreon, because we do have some negotiations in this episode of Millennials versus Gen X that we're covering.
Episode 3, your job is recon.
So we have a lot going on with the channel this week. Obviously, we're catching up still. There's Phil and Will's recap after last week's episode. If you haven't taken a chance to watch that, go do that. There was Digging Deeper last week. There was House of Villains coverage last week. Sabaya dropped by for the predictions of power rankings. Make sure you give that a watch. Sabaya is always fun to have on the podcast. Later today, in a few hours, Phil and I are going to be counting down our top 10 non-English horror films. This is going to be a really fun podcast, so make sure you tune in for that. If you know, we still got a week and a half left of spooky season. You want to get some new horror movies into your repertoire? This is the place to find out about it. Wednesday after Merge, Earn the Merge. Who knows what happens on Wednesday, but Phil and Will will be right back here to recap it for you all. We got Digging Deeper on Thursday. Friday, we'll have McKenna and I back, and Phil and Blake talking House of Villains again. And then some point this weekend, there will be a predictions and power rankings. So you'll have to tune in later to find out who's going to be on that and when it'll be. Patreon, as always, is filled with content. Every season matters. Going through Guatemala right now. $5 Tuesdays, we are talking one of my all-time favorite horror movies this week, 2001's Pulse. Not to be confused with 2006's Pulse, 2001's Pulse. You'll also get our Patreon episode tomorrow discussing Millennial versus Gen X. You get casting perspective on Wednesday. You'll get more Every Season's Matter on Thursday. Phil's after show on Thursday. Phil is finished 2018's Australian Survivor, so you'll get his final thoughts on the season on that on Friday. And we'll be back with a new episode of The Rewind next Saturday. So much content. Make sure you tune in. And thank you for tuning in today. Like the video. Subscribe to the channel. We'll see you next week.
No, we'll see you this week.
Oh, that's this week because it's Monday. We will see you in a couple of days.
All right. Stay tuned for our next episode of The Rewind. Goodbye, everyone.